With over 200 flavor notes to discover, Woodford Reserve is more than just a spirit. It's a spectacle for the senses. Toast to 150 years of the Kentucky Derby with the best bet in bourbon. Raise a glass of Woodford Reserve on this monumental celebration.
And this is Carmen and Yurko, WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
White swims in and finishes. White into the lane, cups it in. Three. Here's White. Standing between two. What a finish from the twirling Kobe White. White in the open floor. White to the rim. Here's White. He's gonna shake Bogdanovich. He does. White will fire. You bet.
42 for Kobe. Those stats don't go anywhere. You realize that, Yurk. That game is like it's played, but it doesn't count. It's weird, isn't it? It's played, but it doesn't count.
They're in limbo.
Yeah.
Limbo.
But Kobe said, I don't care, and nor should he. Kobe was terrific last night. He's been largely terrific most of the year. He's, like Chris said earlier, and we said, he's been the best story. He's the story of the Bulls season. Ultimately, like, how far could he ever take them? I don't know. And I asked you guys, like, do you think he could evolve into Jalen Brunson? He's a couple years younger than Jalen. Could he? And nobody saw Jalen Brunson coming like this other than Merck and maybe Jalen, Randy Merkin, our old producer. I mean, nobody saw that coming. I don't think he could be ever. I don't think he could ever be quite that good. But man, Kobe's ascension this year after a couple of very stagnant years has been impressive.
I told you, the Bulls' strength is where?
It's those two guards that they developed.
It's the backcourt.
Yeah.
And then the two guys that have come back from injury are part of what?
I don't know.
They're part of the backcourt, Carm.
Well, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't know what you meant.
Okay, that's what they're part of.
I meant, like, big picture.
Oh, great. Your strength is in the backcourt. How many basketballs do you have? One. How many positions do you have? Two. How much do you play your starters of a 48-minute game? About 35 to 36 minutes, right?
Yeah, so 35 minutes.
It's great to have depth there, sure. But you need something else on your team. Besides just having good guards, you need something else.
The Bulls are now a 1.5-point dog at Miami. That'll be the first of the two final play-in games on Friday night on ESPN and on TNT. The Bulls will be the ESPN game in South Beach. Bulls Heat, 6 o'clock start our time. Again, a 1.5-point dog. Low total of 206.5. You don't see that very often these days in the NBA. And no Jimmy Butler, who hurt his MCL in Miami's loss last night in Philadelphia. Philly is on to the seventh seed, and a matchup with the aforementioned Jalen Brunson and the New York Knicks. The winner of Bulls Heat will be in Boston on Sunday afternoon, Yurko, for a game and a series against the 64-win Celtics? I believe they finished with 64 wins. And they finished with one of the six best point differentials in NBA history. They're one of only six teams to ever finish a regular season at a plus 11 or better.
All others were champions, I believe.
All others except one. And the only
that's because they finished second.
They lost in the conference finals, right, to another team.
The Minneapolis Lakers to the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yes.
Milwaukee Bucks to the Minneapolis Lakers.
Correct. They might have already been in L.A. at that point. I think they were out of Minneapolis. But it was the Lakers. Yurko's correct. It was like the all-time number one historic team in terms of point differential, and they beat a Bucks team in the conference finals that also happened to be plus 11. So Yurko's right. The trend says the Boston Celtics are going to go very far. I don't know who pushes them in the East. Now with Jimmy hurt.
Nobody.
With Embiid not being 100%, with Giannis being banged up, and like, you know, we talked about earlier in the week, they weren't even particularly sharp with Giannis in the lineup these last 6 weeks with Giannis and Dame. Who pushes the Boston Celtics in the East? They're a huge favorite to win the conference, Yurk. And I mean, like, minus 200, I think. Huge favorite. I don't see anybody pushing them. If anybody, maybe Philly. Maybe you take a little flyer at, like, 8 or 9 to 1 on the Sixers. But I don't know. Without Embiid really being healthy and as versatile and dominant, I think, as he possibly could be, that's going to be tough for anybody to knock out the Celtics. They would really unless they suffer some sort of catastrophic injury along the way here, this would be, like, if you're a Boston fan, if you're that organization and you don't get out of the East, like, you got to kind of look around like,
what are we doing?
Yeah, like, what's happened? What's gone, you know? And I give Boston credit, Yurk. They've been a very good team in recent years. They keep trying to add. The Bulls are going to sell to everybody, hey, we were the eighth. I think the Bulls are going to win tomorrow night without Jimmy Butler, to be honest. You still got Bam. You still got Tyler to contend with. But no Alex Caruso could be significant for the Bulls if that happens.
Is that a best of five then?
No, it's best seven. First round is now best seven. Yeah, they changed that a few years ago. You know, the Bulls are going to sell you, assuming they win tomorrow night. Hey, we made the eighth seed. We're in the, you know, a lot of injuries. We're a playoff team. The Celtics had a disappointing finish, and what they do, like, they made major changes to their roster. They went out and they added Porzingis. They went out and they added Drew Holiday. If they come up short, something tells me they'll try again because they realize what they have in Tatum and Brown, and they've got to capitalize on that. But, like, they have been proactive about
this is their
fixing
year to get
their roster. But this seems to be the year for
this
them.
Is the year to make the NBA championship. For
doesn't
sure.
guarantee
they're going to win. Just chance to win the, get to the NBA championship.
And they did a few years ago, but they came up short. But, like, this is for sure, this feels like a year again where they've got to get out of the East and give themselves a shot against whomever in the West. I think it'll ultimately be the Denver Nuggets. Are people liking the play-in thing? It's been a few years now. The league's not going to go back. It's still, for even though for a small handful of teams, it's still added revenue. The owners like this stuff. I've pitched my plan for baseball for a long time about truncating the season. People are like, shut up, idiot. They're never going to get rid of games. You're right. They won't. They're not going to shorten their season, even though it would be the smart thing for them to do. They're not going to sacrifice the revenue. Our owners, is the league at any point going to say, eh, we tried it, it doesn't really work? This playing thing's here to stay. Whether we like it or not, I don't know that anybody's got a huge problem with it. It's fine. A couple of the games were exciting. Eh, I shouldn't say that. One of the games was, I guess, yesterday's first game. We didn't get to see it because Yurko and I were at the Whiskey U event. I didn't see Sixers Heat. I mean, I know the score was close. I saw the highlights of the fourth quarter.
He got out to a lead. Philadelphia came back.
I thought the Pels game was good. As we sort of anticipated, that would be the good one, the Pels-Lakers. And it was. That Hawks team is terrible. We told you that this week. That's terrible. That's garbage that team can even be threatening to make the playoffs. They have zero perimeter defense. They've got no rim protection. Trae Young, minus 27. Come on. I mean, good luck to you.
That team is terrible. Dreaded plus minus in the NBA.
Yeah, but still, like, but he's constantly like that, Yurk. That team is terrible.
So the Bulls beat a terrible team.
Terrible. Does it work though? I don't know how you would define that. Like, does the play-in thing work? Do you think the league is getting the desired effect out of it? I think it's here to stay, regardless.
If the in-season tournament is here to stay.
I would think.
The play-in games are here to stay.
It's just more games, right?
It makes people believe that they're involved in the playoffs. They keep telling you it's not the playoffs, but it lets more teams believe they're in the playoffs.
And I think in their minds, like, okay, what anti-tanking measures can we put in? I listen to you guys, you, Chris, and Adam, and this was happening a lot yesterday when we were at the bar after the Olive Garden experience. We stopped at Longman and Eagle. We were watching the soccer game, the Man City Real game. And congrats to Yurko's Real side. We were watching the penalty kicks in the car.
In the car.
On
as
my
we were
phone.
Driving.
And Yurko was excited.
Both of my Croats decided to miss.
They did.
Modric missed. You know, was blocked. And Kovacic the same way.
But Yurko is happy because he likes Real Madrid a lot. He's happy they were through. Abdallah, we're sorry that Man City is out. But listening to you guys talk about the measures that are in place over there, whether it's the Premier League or this Champions League thing, and the way teams are incentivized, I don't know nearly as much about it. I listen to you guys. It sure sounds like they've got a formula that very much incentivizes owners to be good and competitive as much as possible. I don't think our sports in North America do a very good job of that. Now, the commissioners are trying to address that. I don't think we come close to matching what they match.
Right, but the reward for finishing in the bottom three is goodbye.
Right. Or you matching what they do, I should say.
You don't belong. That's the reward for finishing in the bottom three. You don't reward. So you've got to somehow play good enough to at least stay at the top level.
And there's a reward for how you get into Champions League, depending on how your leagues do?
Top four in the EPL. Is it the next two or three go to Europa League? I think it's the next two.
It's the next two.
And you guys were saying if, like, you get two of your clubs into the final, another incentive for that league is that they get an added team into the pool for Champions League? Did I understand that right, Chris?
Yeah, so, like, Tottenham fans and Man U fans were rooting for Arsenal, which is weird for them, obviously.
Right.
Because they would then, one of those teams would then have a chance to qualify for Champions League. Yeah. Because there's a new rule in the Champions League that if you make it, you're league gets an extra team.
They certainly seem to have a pretty good plan in place. Maybe that's why it's so successful. Teams are, I don't know, are teams largely competitive? Do teams, I'm sure there are fan bases that can play.
Take a look. Let's be honest. When you look at Champions League, usually you've got 12 teams that make it every year.
Is that right?
And then there's about four teams that kind of rotate through the process. You know what I'm saying?
For this conversation, Champions League is a wrong competition to look at because it's the best teams from all of the leagues in Europe.
Okay.
So you would want to look at the Premier League.
Right.
Or La Liga. Or League One.
And do they do a better job of incentivizing teams to spend and to be competitive? It seems on the surface to someone who doesn't know as much as you guys that the answer would be yes.
Yeah, 100%.
Because if you had like an MLB 1 and an MLB 2, let's say, and you had minor league teams or whatever it was, like the White Sox, the A's, the Marlins,
the Pirates,
like the worst teams in baseball would still be fighting to compete to avoid relegation. And because then you would take, your money would be taken away. Your TV money would be taken away. You wouldn't be on Peacock. You wouldn't be Paramount Plus. You wouldn't be on, you know, USA or on, you wouldn't be on TV. The TV money is not there for you.
That's how you do it.
It's a guaranteed split, right? So, like, there's no incentive to not be absolute horse blank.
Right.
Because you get a guaranteed split of the TV revenue. But if you had to face, like, if Jerry Reinsdorf had to face dead in the eye.
Yeah.
Next season, not having a split of TV revenue because he would be playing in minor league ballparks on the road, or he would not be on television with the rest of Major League Baseball. There would be incentive to win baseball games.
Are there still owners over there that don't care, and their teams historically don't spend, and they're non-competitive? Does it still exist?
I mean, there's teams that don't spend the way like Liverpool and Man City and Man United. Like, there are middling teams where you're like,
United spends, but spends poorly. So
the argument is that anybody who's had a major U.S. investor in there has become more frugal over time.
Yes. That's why United gets a lot of, they highlight this because the Glazer family that owns the Buccaneers owns a piece of Man United at the moment.
Right.
That ownership is now changing for them, and that's why fans have wanted an ownership change, because the Glazer family has treated Man U as if it's the National Football League or Major League Baseball, where, like, we're just good being sixth.
And they don't...
when they should be first.
The same way.
And I think all the soccer guys in the room should agree that Man U should always be first.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be.
So Kroenke, same thing with Kroenke, Fenway Group.
Is that right?
Anything with American investment over there.
Yes.
They've polluted them.
Exactly. They polluted them with American thinking.
You want that oil money.
You want the oil money from the Saudis and the owners that have come in, or the Russian oligarchs.
Right.
They came in for a long time.
Right. Here's like the flip side of it, right? Like a team like Everton that should be a top six club. They've got a rich history. They have been great in the past. Their ownership group is struggling and their fans are revolting.
Yeah.
And they are fighting to stay out of the bottom three right now. It looks like they'll be safe. But for a moment in time this season, they were in the bottom group. And that's like a club that their fans are holding protests.
Yeah.
They want ownership change. And, like, you get real change if that takes place, if you're a big club like that, because you get pushed down a league.
It seems like those measures work a lot better than, let's do a play-in tournament and see if we can prevent tanking.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying.
100%.
They're just not getting there. So they're not getting there the same way.
The opposite of that is Wrexham, who has now jumped up two divisions.
Yes.
And now if they can jump up again next year, come into that Championship League, which is one below the Premier League,
they can keep going.
They can keep getting up.
Is that the one Ryan Reynolds owns?
Yes.
That's
the one Ryan Reynolds owns. And what is it, Rob McElhenney, whatever his name is?
Yeah, it's a great story.
Is that right?
In 2 years, they've jumped two leagues.
Wow.
And they spent $2.5 million to buy the team.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And now it's worth exponentially more, I would think, especially if they keep climbing.
If they get to the Premier League, it's going to be worth a whole lot more.
And there's conversations now of a new stadium because they have such added revenue. And then, like that's how it should be done.
Yeah.
Like, normally, when like Chris said, when Americans come in and buy a team like this, it's like, oh, no.
Right.
It's the complete opposite of it, because they're like, they're pumping money into the team. Yeah.
They also started at the very bottom.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Right. It was easier.
There's also guys, if you look at the investment groups over the course of the last 30 years, they'll come in, they'll buy a team at a lower division for an X amount of dollars, make an investment in the players, get to the Premier League, and then they'll turn the club over. They'll flip the club, and they'll make a gazillion dollars because they were able to take the club at a small number from a lower division, get them to the top division, and then sell the club to somebody who wants to come in because they want to participate at the top division. So there's, like, real players in Europe that do that specifically as an investment.
Interesting. Yeah, so if you got a thought on the play-in tournament, not just just in general, like, is this working? I mean, the league, I would assume, is going to keep this in place. And I don't know. To me, it almost like it gives the team, like a Bulls, a little bit of a – it almost gives them, like, an excuse, if you know what I mean, like where they're going to come out and be like, hey, look what we did.
You're saying in a negative connotation. This is not good for basketball. This is not good for the Chicago Bulls. That we finished 10th, we're four games under 500.
They're using it as
we're
like,
going to find a way to win a couple of games and get into the playoffs and get our asses kicked by Boston, but yet the messaging we can go ahead and throw out there is this is a playoff team with injuries and with guys coming back healthy. All of a sudden, we're going to be something great.
I think that's what's going to happen, Yerk. And
that's not a good thing.
I get it. I'm with you. Yeah. 312-332-3776 if you got a thought, ring us up. Plus, McKnight at the Movies coming up next.
Chicago's home for sports on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago. Carmen and Yurko are back. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
McKnight at the Movies. Connor McKnight recreates classic cinema on Carmen and Yurko, only on ESPN Chicago.
I feel like I've been on a hot streak lately with McKnight at the Movies, Yurk.
You have been, because two of them I've never seen, and one I just couldn't grab the other weekend, or the other week.
Time to play. We play along with you. We don't know the movies Connor selects. We love this part of the week. McKnight at the Movies. Winner today is going to get four tickets for Sunday's Wolves game. It's a family Sunday at 3 o'clock against Rockford. Can't beat that. So great prize for today. Winner will get a four-pack to Sunday's Wolves game. They come down the home stretch of the regular season. First correct caller wins at 312-332-3776. All right, you ready?
I am ready.
It is April 18th, 2024. It's Danny Zetterman's birthday, by the way. Content director
extraordinaire. Happy birthday, yeah.
Happy birthday to Danny. I used to bring him lox and bagels, and he would eat it, believe it or not. Now he won't eat the bagel. I'm like, have a bagel.
You should have brought him the plate of tiramisu that said happy birthday on it.
We should have brought him with us yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
I said, Danny, put a little schmear on the bagel. Put a little lox and come on. It's not going to kill you. I promise it's not going to kill you. You can eat it. It's good. But no. So I stopped bringing bagels on his birthday.
No more?
No. Yeah. You don't want
them. If he's not going to enjoy them, what's the use of bringing a bagel?
Danny, it's your birthday. Treat yourself.
You deserve it.
A little schmear on a little poppy seed.
You deserve
it. A little sesame bagel.
You deserve a break today.
Right? Anyway, happy birthday, Danny. All right, here we go. McKnight at the Movies, part one.
Our scene opens on sweet God, no. No, why God? All I want to do is make these stupid little bits of these stupid little movies I like, and this comes on. All right, I don't know. Our main character has a devil-may-care attitude about something everyone else is serious about. That's original. I'm sure it makes people like him. He's on the phone with someone we don't like, probably a guy who takes his job too seriously. Doesn't take a psych degree here to figure out we hate this guy, but really it's because we are that guy, not the cool guy. Let's see, what else? I don't know. More talking and grousing and bluff calling, some mixed metaphors, great writing. Some acting that feels like good acting, but then you watch something like The Postman or even Prince of Thieves and realize those are even better than this.
Is he doing it again?
Twitch has it.
Is he doing it again? I think I know it. I think he's doing it. Connor, I think he's doing it again.
What is he doing
again? A bit on our actors. Kind of gave up the main guy there. A lot like this movie gives up on realism or character development. Let's see, who else? We've got What's in Your Wallet. We've got President Camacho, the bad guy general in everything, Primetime, the guy who wishes his emails hadn't gone out, the guy who swore by Jimmy Clausen, Richard Nixon, the dad from Sandlot, Jonah Ryan, Clark Kent, the stranger, the guy who played the cook in Waiting. That movie's good. Why couldn't we do that? Oh, and the late, great Chadwick Boseman. Zero shade here. Wakanda forever.
He did it again. When he got to the end of the first clue, I'm like, he's doing it again, isn't he?
Third year in a row.
The movie's doing this weird cut screen, zoom in, zoom out thing, like the editor just learned with the three-dot button doesn't Final Cut. That's cool. I guess if you have to make a movie where the climax is about phone calls, that's a way to do it. All right, my favorite part. The part where the real twist of the knife is a punt returner. That's great. The final piece of the puzzle, the coup de grace, is a punt returner. This guy's been playing hot shot, loose cannon, GM for a solid 90 minutes now, and the consensus he wants from the room is, we need a punt returner. No wonder he wasn't listening to his staff the entire movie. The deal gets done. The pancake line gets said. Abdallah told me to do something funnier. Bleck bleeped the swear words. Yurko asked about the actors. We're all good. It's draft day. Just call and say draft day, and we'll give you stuff. God, I hate this movie.
That's incredible. So we're off because the next Thursday, because the White Sox have a noon game to wrap up a four-game series against the Twins, we won't have a draft day show. We'll be on the next day recapping the draft, which is more important, let's face it. We're going to be with Waddle and Sylvie, like not the whole show together, but our show followed by Waddle and Sylvie live at the Buffalo Wild Wings in Woodridge on Route 53. So that's great fun.
We will be there.
So Connor did it a week early. This is becoming a recurring theme and a funny bit. He just does different scenes from draft day. Draft day is kind of like the Olive Garden. Like maybe it's not the worst movie you've ever seen or ever made, but it's probably close. There's probably, like I was saying, there's some crimes against cuisine that are happening at the Olive Garden. There's some crimes against movie making and acting that are happening in draft day. It's awful.
He did a much better job of what I told him to do. My original plan was for him to just go, our scene opens. You know what, guys? It's draft day. That, just call. First
that,
caller.
That is
draft day,
so funny. Draft day. Mike in Downers was first, though, and he got it. Go ahead, Mike. Just say it.
You know what, guys? I've never even seen it. It's draft day,
It's draft day. Can you go to the Wolves game for a family Sunday on Sunday?
I can.
All right, great. Use those tickets. Take the family. Have fun, Mikey. Thanks, buddy. Make sure we get all your info. Mike just won a four-pack of tickets for the Wolves game. We are Chicago. We are hockey. We are the Wolves, and here is the reveal.
That's not fair.
Well, you want to cry about it, Tommy? You want to make a little magic before the clock runs out on both of us?
$7 million cheaper solves our salary cap problem. We're still going to give the fans what they want.
Okay, screw it. No more offer. It's off the table, Tom. I'm taking cap.
Whoa, no. Wait. All right, you have a deal.
I give you your picks. We have a deal.
What else do we need?
Offense. Special teams. Putney, get Putney.
Yeah. David Putney. Putney. Yeah. Okay. Hello? Sonny?
I'm sorry, that deal's now off the table.
What?
We live in a different world than we did just 30 seconds ago.
Tension, what? Drama.
What do you want now?
Cut it with a knife.
I want my picks back, and I want David Putney.
I need a punt returner.
Of course, everybody needs a punt returner.
Where the hell did that come from?
Bayless Jones.
It doesn't matter. I want all my picks back, and I want David Putney just because I feel like it.
You're out of your mind.
Yeah, I am. Haven't I proved that already? You make this deal right now, Tom, and you get Bo Callahan. Say it with me. You get Bo.
Dramatic music.
I mean, come on, Tom,
Lord,
say it with me, you pancake eating.
Pancake what?
Pancake eating mother bleeper.
Blinker.
Boy, just awful.
You know, I mean, Cap loves that movie.
I like pancakes, though.
What's wrong with eating pancakes? Nothing. I love pancakes. Pancakes are so good.
I like pancakes as well. Isn't it cake eater?
I don't
know.
That's a diss.
It's a cake eater.
Yeah. Why he decided to bring pancakes?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, the line is not you're a pancake eater.
Have you guys seen the movie?
I saw it.
I have seen the movie. Yeah,
okay.
One time.
I could barely stomach it. I mean, it was.
I have not seen the movie.
Don't.
Well, I mean,
actually,
I feel
you
like
know
I
what? You need to lose a bet, and then we're going to watch draft day. I got to find a bet you're going to lose.
Clockwork Orange made a draft
day. You should watch it so you know what everybody's talking about.
I feel like I've already seen it. This is the third year he's done it in a row.
Amazing. And Connor's just doing it every draft year. Every draft week. I love it.
It's hard. You know what? It is
draft week.
It's difficult to watch. Yeah, well, you guys aren't
on
Thursday.
That's what I was saying. We're not on it.
A little curveball.
I'd say this. It's difficult to watch. Not like you watch and it seems as if it's a satire.
I don't think they meant it that way, though.
Right, exactly.
Right,
when you watch it, it comes across as if it's satirical. but it's not. It's meant to be serious.
Right.
And that's what's funny about it.
Maybe you're right.
If Abdallah sat down today and watched draft day, he would think that it's a joke.
It's almost like a Christopher Guest mockumentary. Would be brilliant, but it's
one
not.
One of those, or like a Saturday Night Live short.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Like each scene plays out as if it's the first thing they play after the monologue.
The sad thing is, they wrote and made that movie, and they thought it was going to be, dramatic and impactful and real, and it's complete nonsense.
See, you guys should have known the answer to this.
There's nothing real about it.
Someone just told us that the reason he calls him a pancake-eating MF-er is because earlier in the movie, he calls him and he's eating pancakes.
Oh, I don't remember that. Like I said, I saw it one time.
To be honest, my attention to detail to that film was not there.
I don't have the patience to have attention to detail with Chris.
What a callback.
To draft day. Yeah.
Congrats to them.
He's not even on mic right now.
What a callback.
He's done. I don't know what he's doing.
What are we doing?
What are you guys asking me to do? Three in a row. It lost its luster for me.
It's a bit.
It bit bad.
People got mad at me when I told him to put his master's pool down, so I'm not going to say anything. But
you were yelling at him yesterday at lunch. That was great.
That's all you do is yell at me.
The waitress, the wonderful, nice waitress, was trying to put your food in front of you, and you wouldn't budge because you were like a child playing a video game. You were like a 12-year-old.
I was racing, man.
It would literally be something I would say
like playing Galaga.
To my kids.
Like playing Galaga, and I'm about to get there. I'm about to get the extra guy looped up right before the challenge stage.
And she's trying to put food in front of you.
She decided it was time to interrupt me.
She's trying to do her job.
Tell me how wonderful she is again.
She was great. And he's over here watching. He's not. The mic is. He's doing the show. We're doing a talk show. The mic's over here. He's looking at
you're talking to those
and
guys.
To be fair, people have called
they're
and
interested.
Asked. Carmen, you tipped to your credit. You tipped very generously. Because people were asking, because everyone likes to go back to how you're not a good tipper, even though you are a very good tipper. You're a good tipper.
You tipped well. Peggy, she's like, you only tipped 20%.
Yeah, you tipped very well.
Hey, snob.
You tipped very well.
Hey, cake eater.
Yeah.
That's what a cake eater is.
Oh, are you going after my partner on the post-game show? Uh-oh.
You only tipped 20%?
You leave her Porsche SUV out of this.
We're supposed to tip more than 20% now?
You tipped more than 20%.
Talk to Abdallah. Abdallah tips 45% on haircuts.
That's different. That's an intimate relationship.
That's crazy.
Have you guys not heard this?
40%.
I've heard it.
40%.
Nonsense.
40%.
It's an intimate relationship.
He's got 16, money falling out of his pockets.
$16 on a $40
tab? 45%.
It's an intimate relationship.
You should tip for me being your friend.
You're throwing the whole system out of whack with stuff like that.
No, you're not.
That's dumb.
We took phone calls for 2 days about people saying I was in the right.
No.
40%,
Adam. From barbers, from hairdressers, from people that tip that much.
What do you think hairdressers are going to say? Of course, absolutely.
From people that get their haircut, it is an intimate relationship.
I need a 25% tip for every show we host, having to sit with you.
You're lucky you're on the air.
Keep your money in your pocket and don't tip us.
I guess in fairness, I tip 30% to the woman who cuts my hair.
There you go.
It's not 45%.
It's not 40%. You keep adding numbers to it. It's 40%.
Yeah, she's cute. I tip.
Cute girl?
Yeah, she is. I tip. I give her. My haircut's inexpensive. I get my haircut in the suburbs, and it's a good haircut. People might disagree, but I love it.
What'd you tip her?
I tip her. It's $23 for the haircut. I give her $30. I tip $7.
Rockefeller.
So I guess sometimes you could tip over 20, but when did it happen in restaurants that we have to tip more than 20%? And if you don't, you're like, oh, you're a bad tipper. 20%. If you do something completely exceptional, I
remember when they were fighting for 18%. Remember 15%, not including alcohol? Remember when that was the norm?
Yeah, I tip on everything. 15%. I tip on the final tab.
Remember, though, 15%, not including alcohol. If you drink $400 with alcohol at the table over the course, right? 15% on the food, not including alcohol. If you tip 15% on the whole bill, do they look down at you? I'm asking a serious question. At $60 tips on the alcohol, right?
Yeah.
And say the food bill was $400, right?
Yeah. Yes, I know.
So you tipped a total of $120 on the whole thing when theoretically you should only tip $60 because it's not on the alcohol.
I'll tell you this. The Uber driver that took us to Longman Eagle that decided to take a detour didn't get 20%.
No? All right. He took us on a little weird detour, so I guess I could see that. But, I don't know where this came from. If you don't tip more than 20%, you're a bad tipper. Baloney. That's nonsense.
That's out of this world.
If 20% is what,
It's 15%. I don't know why you keep guys mentioning 20%. When did it become 20%?
You're a good tipper. You know that. You are. Stop it. You tip 20%. I've seen you tip.
I tipped 33% on yesterday's $60 tab.
Yes, you did. You're a very generous tipper. I think we all are.
I don't like what people tell
tip.
Me.
Shut up.
I don't like people tell me what I have to tip, though.
Nobody's telling what you have to.
You better be careful, you know? I'm not saying you are. I'm saying you better be careful.
But
waiter or waitress ever came back to me and said, hey, I didn't tip enough.
Well, that would never happen unless you tipped like
12. That ever happened, it'd be the back of the hand.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
The back of the hand.
That would be something egregious, though, I would think. Like you tipped 10 or 12%, and then I wouldn't blame them.
Back of the hand.
You know, I think of the scene in The Sopranos. Remember when Christopher's out of cash and he can't tip the he can't tip the poor waiter? And Sopranos was just... It
they
was so great.
Remember when the guy in the deli kept passing him by?
The life those animals live.
Hey, remember when the guy in the deli kept passing him by? He went to either the bakery or the deli.
He shoots him in the
bakery.
Foot.
Yeah, and he shoots him in the foot. What am I? You're not paying attention to me?
He's waiting online for buns, right?
Yeah, that's what it was.
We're going to lunch rush it coming up next.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. Listen to us now. Live on the ESPN Chicago app.
Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN Chicago.
Lunch rush it. I actually did tip my Uber driver last night 22%. So there you go.
There's did
Uber
you?
But he was the nicest guy ever. Do you ever get an Uber and the guy shakes your hand? It was the first time that had ever happened to me.
I've never shaken the hand of an Uber driver. I have communicated with an Uber driver.
He turned around and he's nice to meet you.
A lot of fellow Balkans, believe it or not, Uber drivers.
He's
especially in Scottsdale and the Las Vegas area.
He was from the Ukraine, Yerk.
Ukraine?
Yeah.
Wow.
And not only did he shake my hand, he gave me a keychain.
Oh, wonderful. A gift.
He said he recently drove from California to the Midwest, and he gave me a
keychain. On a lark?
And he gave me a keychain.
Because that's what he wanted to do.
It said, moosin' around Utah. And it had a little moose that spins. I swear to God, I was going to bring it in and show you guys. It's at my house.
That's fine. He gave it to you.
Moosin' around in Utah. And he goes, here, for you.
He finds little tchotchkes somewhere. He gives you gifts. And then you're more likely to overtip him.
He was the nicest guy ever.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No touching, though.
He did. He reached back and he shook my hand.
No touching.
He didn't hug. Nope.
Did he have a certain scent about him?
Nope.
Or was he all right?
Nope. Car was clean.
All right.
He smelled delightful. Yeah. It's an enjoyable Uber ride.
Wonderful.
What else happened in that ride?
That was it.
Any other tips yesterday
that you
passed out? Did you give a tip to the ladies last night? Remember the bartenders from our wonderful event last night?
I did right when I got my first cocktail.
Did you?
Yeah.
You were doing some tipping there. I tipped Will, our music guy.
Oh, nice.
I threw a 20 in his guitar. I threw a 20 in his guitar for him.
I did not do that. Shame on me. Good call, Yurko. I'm glad you did that.
You handled that. I handled that.
Good for you.
Will, I tell you, good voice out of Will there.
Will, we had some musical accompaniment.
Accompaniment.
Last night at Whiskey.
One day, lady, you'll accompany me.
Awesome. Yes. All right, let's lunch rush it with Adam.
Let's do it.
Hello, gentlemen.
We're going long this segment.
Can't wait till you have to watch.
I've already announced.
Can't wait till you have to watch Draft Day.
Yeah,
I'll watch it. It doesn't have to be a punishment. I've seen horrible movies.
We should have a sleepover, guys. All with like the onesie NFL pajamas. Yeah, we'll have a real good time.
I could do a sleepover. You want to do a sleepover here at the station?
Sleepover? I can do it. I can do that. I do want Adam Knight, since the Olive Garden's paid off. I don't want to take him somewhere bad. I think he should have to take us somewhere good, like Old Jerusalem. He loves that place.
Love Old Jerusalem.
I might want Adam to take us there. Like, all right, let's not go eat a really good meal, and you pay for it, Adam. All right, go ahead, Adam.
All right, so we were talking about Draft Day, and isn't the theme of that movie that no one went to that dude's birthday party?
Pretty much.
No one went to Bo Callahan's birthday party. Okay, yeah. So The Athletic talked to 8 scouts about intangibles of the top draft quarterbacks.
They
ranked them by intangibles. So they were each assigned different categories, and they had to rank them 1 through 5, 5 being the highest, 1 being the lowest.
I'm nervous.
And you should be. The number one quarterback in intangibles, J.J. McCarthy with a score of 137.5.
But isn't, by definition, isn't it hard to put a score or a grade on an intangible?
But they tried to do it.
They tried to do it.
The point is they're trying to quantify it.
But it seems like an exercise in futility. It seems like an oxymoron. How could
they're still trying to do it. The one thing that hasn't been able to be done is to put a metric on an intangible.
But I don't think that's by definition.
No. Okay, but they're coming up with the system.
Let me ask you who this reminds you of.
Oh, God.
Football junkie, always in the building, first in, last out, studies his rear end off.
Mitch Trubisky.
The players love him, and so do the coaches.
Mitch Trubisky.
That's J.J. McCarthy.
Kyle Orton.
Yep. Number two, Jaden Daniels, only 1 point behind J.J. McCarthy. You never saw him frenetic or frantic on the field. He's always poised, going through his progressions. He's chill under pressure. He doesn't get rattled. Number three, Drake May, 130.5 points. He's been beat up good, and he can take it. He always wants to be great, another football junkie in the film room.
He can
take
it.
Ball. Loves ball.
Ball. He can take it.
Loves ball.
Ball.
Number four, Michael Penix Jr. with 128.5 points.
He loves ball, too.
Loves ball, just keeps coming back, which is a testament to him. Healthy this season, and he learned how to take care of his body. Puts a lot of work into his body and time off the field. Despite being banged up, he stands still in the pocket, not afraid to take a hit.
Ball.
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 Ball. Number five, Bo Nix.
Ball.
Ball. Loves ball. Struggled early. Didn't respond well. Fans wanted to get rid of him. He talked back to critics. Came across as egotistical. But he's matured at Oregon. Shows toughness after the adversity he had at Auburn. All that good stuff. Loves the film
ball.
Room. Loves
ball. Loves film room. He loves ball.
Ball.
Coming in last.
Ball.
Caleb Williams.
Doesn't love ball.
Doesn't love ball.
Loves ball.
Loves balls.
Loves ball. It wasn't easy trying to get information on him. You had to dig. Everyone tries to protect him, which leads you to wonder why they're trying to protect him. If he has been banged up, we don't know. We know he wasn't really banged up. His toughness has yet to be determined. He had a red carpet runway experience at every stop and hasn't had much to overcome. But when you end up sobbing in your mom's arms after getting beat, that's a disqualifier for people.
Wow. Well, you know what I think? I think they should pass on Caleb, trade out, and get the Hall.
Hall for ball.
That's it. I'm done.
The Hall for ball.
They just graded the intangibles, and I'm done with Caleb Williams.
Yeah. Go for the Hall and get the guy who loves ball.
Because we can't find out information. We're going to give him a lower grade. I mean, you talked about it being a little bit stupid, an exercise of futility.
You think?
When that comes in because he's protected, all of a sudden his intangibles are down because we don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Like, what a silly exercise. Yeah,
that was
but people
dumb.
Are going to hear it and be like, I told you, trade out and get the Hall.
No.
You don't want Caleb.
They might get the Hall for number nine anyway.
I mean, like, Bigsy's still answering questions in his mailbag. I think Bigsy's beside himself. Like, in his Tribune mailbag, people are asking about, like...
He was calling out readers. It was great.
I know. Well, he's like, guys, where have you been the last 3 months? Like,
guys are like, why aren't they getting the Hall for Caleb because of all the problems?
The Hall and the ball.
He doesn't want to play or he wants to play for Washington. Why aren't they getting the Hall? Bigsy's like, what?
Ball.
I'd trade for the Hall and get the guy who loves ball. That's what I'm doing. I'm done.
You want the first in, last out guy.
I came up with a new motto today on the Unhinged podcast. Can't say it here.
No.
Right, Yerk? I can't say it.
Can't say it, no.
I'd get in trouble. I could say it, we could dump it, but I won't do that. Came up with a new motto. It's a good one. It's like life. It's like words to live by, truly.
Okay, let me hear it.
Well, you know I can't say it. I said it on Unhinged. We can't say it here. But I just came up with a new one for our show leading up to next week. Trade for the Hall for the guy who loves ball. That's it. I'm
very,
off of Caleb.
Very wordy.
Oh, okay. All right.
That is. It doesn't fit on a billboard. Doesn't fit on a billboard, Carm.
Ball.
It's too long.
Ball.
That can't
for
be
the
a headline.
We love ball.
Yeah, that can't be a headline. Five words, max.
I love the idea of like we're gonna grade the intangibles. Like I don't
listen, man. You got to get clicks until next Thursday. We're a week
right.
away.
That's what we do.
I just don't know how you. They got
to
get clicks.
Call for the ball.
Our draft expert, Yurko.
That's right.
Was telling individuals on the blue line yesterday. He was also concerned about the crying.
That's true. Yurko's been consistent with that.
I told him that.
He said, I'm a little concerned about the crime.
Paint your nails what you want. Put tattoos on your body.
Nobody cares.
Do whatever you want. You want to wear eyeshadow, wear eyeshadow. Yeah, I don't care.
Right.
Doesn't make a difference to me.
But you didn't like the crime.
I don't like the crying in mom's arms. I don't care.
Pete Prisco didn't either. At some point,
you got to stand on your own 2 feet.
Well.
Yeah. Carm, here's the perfect thing. This is what mom should have done. You saw the video,
pushed
right?
Pushed him away.
There's three ospreys in there, and the mom's looking down. I got enough food for two ospreys. She takes one, dumps them over the top. I got food for two and for myself. I got one too many here. Mom should have pointed to the bench and said, get your ass over there and buck up, champ. It's time to adjust on the fly and make something happen.
Well, the game was over.
The mother osprey picked the bird up and fired it to the ground.
Is this like a real thing that you saw happen
parental.
In nature?
That is parenting right there.
Did you like see that on a documentary or something?
No, it was on for such a long time, Carm. It was on your Instagram.
Was it?
Yeah, it was on an Instagram.
Awesome.
You see it.
What is an osprey, Yerk?
A bird, Carm.
No, I
know, but what kind of like what kind
seahawk.
Of a bird is
it? It's a seahawk.
It's a sea-going bird.
A sea-going bird.
When Chauncey joins us throughout the football season, and he has to pick between the Cardinals and the Seahawks,
he goes. He always says that
there is no bird that is a seahawk.
Okay.
The closest thing is the osprey.
Is the osprey? Got it. Okay.
Or a seagull. Mm-hmm.
Or like a seagull.
They don't name them seagulls.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a pretty bird, the osprey. I'm looking now.
Oh, yeah.
You never saw that Instagram footage, Carm?
Nice bird.
Maybe somebody will forward it to you.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I mean, she literally looks. She's got food in the nest. She goes, bigger baby, bigger baby, weakling baby. Goodbye, weakling baby.
Right, I'm going to put weakling baby.
Over the top.
Two quick notes while you're doing that.
Go ahead, Adam.
Elliot Wolf, the director of scouting for the Patriots, said that the number three pick is open for business. The Patriots are open for business with the number three pick.
Well, that makes it interesting.
I believe.
And very interesting considering that the report is today that the Vikings are in Baton Rouge meeting with Jaden Daniels.
Ooh.
And they really want to trade up for
him. Sure. Not JJ, but they want Jaden Daniels.
Really want to trade
up. They're going to give the
smoke.
Vikings are going to give somebody. Somebody's going to get a haul from the Vikings.
That's right.
Should the Bears move to three?
No.
Marvin Harrison Jr.?
No.
Oh, that's another thing I wanted to say. If we're embracing debate, hashtag embrace debate, there was a very heated debate on the morning show today, Cap and Jay Hood, between Cap and Hood and Shane Norling. Cap suggested that the Bears should trade 9 and their number one pick next year to move up,
oh dear God,
with the Cardinals to get Marvin Harrison Jr.
I wouldn't do that.
They were screaming at each other.
I wouldn't do that.
Oh, that they should do it. Hood agreed, said you should move heaven and earth for the best.
Really?
That they should trade next year's first round pick, not the extra second that you have.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
Next year's first round pick and 9, obviously, because you swap picks and move up and get Marvin Harrison Jr.
I would not do that.
Because if you wait and you get someone at 9 or you trade back, the hit rate's only like 50% or something like that.
No.
Nah, I wouldn't do it.
Carm, you just gave us the same look you gave us yesterday when you said, don't eat that. Don't eat that. Don't do that. You just gave us the same look. Don't eat that.
That's troubling. Yeah, don't do it. I wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't do that.
It's like, is there glass in it? I'm like, no, but don't. It's just as bad. Don't do it. What else in the lunch rush? Is that it?
We didn't get into it yesterday. There was the report. There's the long story about Bill Belichick and why he didn't get a job.
Oh, man, I read that story.
Basically, he didn't get the job in Atlanta because of a conversation between Robert Kraft and Arthur Smith, the owner of the...
Arthur Blank, sorry.
The owner of the Falcons, and where Kraft warned him about Bill Belichick.
Do you want me to read some of it when we come back?
Yeah, that's why I saved it for the end, and maybe we should get into it a little bit more.
I can read a few highlights from it for me. It was a really long article by that crew, Don Vannata. That's a great crew. I mean, they really are good. Don Vannata, Seth Wickersham, Jeremy Fowler all contributed, and a very lengthy piece on why Bill Belichick didn't find a job and if he'll ever find one again as a head coach in the NFL. Maybe I'll read a few highlights before the top of the hour. Jesse coming up after 2. It's Carmen and Yerk. We'll be right back.
Show on Twitter at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64. This is ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
We want a few things from that story real quick, Yurk, and then we'll talk to Jesse after 2.
Absolutely.
So, like,
absolutely.
Belichick thought he was going to be the guy, and apparently he met with Arthur Blank by himself.
Sure.
After the season ended on Blank's yacht. They were, like, they were down somewhere in the Caribbean, I think. God, that's got to be nice, huh? You got a yacht, you're cruising on the Caribbean. And he thought it went super well. But then this was a long story. I mean, it was like 15 pages if you want to check it out. Very well reported, very well researched, though, and it was thorough, and that's what you'd expect from that crew. It's Don Van Natta and Seth Wickersham and Jeremy Fowler. Despite that friendly first session, the unthinkable happened for a billionaire and a legendary coach. Blank and Belichick checked each other's references. Blank spoke by phone at least twice to Robert Kraft. Among the NFL owners, Blank considers Kraft his closest friend. Publicly, Kraft and Blank have said Kraft expressed only support and praise for his former head coach. But, now this is a little hard to follow, if you can follow this paragraph real quick. But, in a conversation with Blank, Kraft delivered a stark assessment of Belichick's character, according to a source who spoke to two people, a close Kraft friend and a longtime Belichick confidant. The source quoted that Belichick's source as saying, Robert Kraft called Arthur Blank to warn him not to trust Bill. That account was backed up, the source said, by the close Kraft friend. Again, that's a lot of like, there's a lot of sources and a lot of people and a lot of friends if you can follow that. The sources said Kraft made clear to Blank that, quote, you'll never have a warm conversation with him, close quote. Echoing what Bill Parcells told Kraft in 96 when he wanted to bust the budget and hire Belichick. Quote, Blank likes coaches who feel part of the family, a Falcon source said, and it wasn't going to ever be that way with Bill, close quote. I mean, there's more in there. And then at the end, it says, Yerk, that Belichick wasn't even in their top three. They went with Morris. Bobby Slowick was in there. And then who am I blanking at him if I can't remember who finished third? Mike McDonald, who got the Seahawks job. So Belichick went from thinking it was his job to not even being in the top three when Blank put it before the whole organization.
The reporting is what the reporting is, right? So if you want to know what Kraft thought of Belichick, look to the video, right? The stuff that was produced, the docudrama or whatever it is, the three parts or whatever that is. Watch that. And that was produced by Kraft and Kraft's people.
He's mad about it.
Feel what the feeling was about Belichick there, okay? Because that was approved by the big guy from above. I don't know from where, a massage parlor somewhere or not. Maybe. Who knows? But either way, it was approved by Robert Kraft to put that messaging out. So if they're coming up with this, I would then go to the series to say, hey, what's the feeling in that series to try to provide whether there's some validity in it or no validity in it whatsoever in this reporting. So there you go. I'd say it's leaning more toward the truth than it is toward fiction.